Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. He's Lance Mendel. I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter if you would prefer to contact us that way right here on the program today. We'll talk to Mitch Holthus, the play-by-play man for the Kansas City Chiefs, to preview the Chiefs at about 12:15. If you want to get in before then on the phones to talk some Giants football, we'll certainly be taking your calls again at 201-939-4513. And Lance, we've talked a lot about how the Giants have a tough schedule. The travel's a little bit rough, and one of the reasons is they're playing the AFC West, which is probably the best conference in the AFC. Best division in the AFC, excuse me.
I think that's a fair assessment, especially when you take it to depth. I wouldn't look over the AFC North, overlook that, rather. I think that the Baltimore Ravens are due for a bounce-back season, and we'll see what happens with Cincinnati. I think the Bengals did a nice job, at least with the draft.
You left out Cleveland there.
Well, I know. It was a bad job by me. Yeah, I know. Not giving the Browns some credit. My apologies. I think that has to do with a little track record we call in the National Football League.
Exactly.
But to answer your question about the AFC West, I think from top to bottom, there's a very strong division. Usually Kansas City's been the team to beat. Oakland now is emerging over the last few seasons because their rookie class, specifically in 2014, has come a long way. It's amazing to me. Derek Carr, Khalil Mack, and Gabe Jackson were their top three picks in 2014. And
it's not bad.
Are cornerstones at different facets of their team, at quarterback, at linebacker, as well as the offensive line.
And they're all signed long-term, too, right?
Well, Jackson and Carr. Mack is up next. They picked up his fifth-year option, but now they have to determine what they can do to work out a long-term extension. But I don't think that's going to be a problem. I'm sure that they're going to get that done, considering what he's brought to the table. He's one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League. We actually just wrote about that in our new Cover 3, where we talked about some of the best opponents that the Giants are going to see. So the Raiders, to me now, all of a sudden, emerging as perhaps the team to beat. Denver, one thing I need to see with the Broncos is, can you get some continuity and can you get good play out of the quarterback position? Other than that, you love what they do defensively, secondary and their defensive line. I think their running game and their offensive line has come a long way. And then as far as the L.A. Chargers, you know, the Chargers may be that emerging team, too, that could bounce back after they've dealt with some injuries. They've also tried to revamp their roster. And I think their defense between Melvin Ingram, let's not forget, and Joey Bosa, you know, we almost seem to forget bringing in the Chargers into the conversation about dominant pass rushing units. They have that, and they have a pretty good secondary. I think they got some nice weapons at the cornerback position. So top to bottom, a lot of strengths in that division, and this, unfortunately for the Giants, is the year that they have to try to tackle that group.
And again, we'll get an in-depth look at the Chiefs from their play-by-play man Mitch Holthus in about 10 minutes. If you want to go check out that interview, make sure you go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app, where you can watch the show in its totality. And, Lance, I want to follow up on some of your stuff on the AFC West real quick. You know, the funny thing about, I think, the division is it is deep. I think the teams knock each other off. Oddly enough, if you think about it, the Broncos don't have a true number one running back. The Chiefs don't really have a true number one running back. The Raiders kind of do,
I figure guess. Lynch is going to be the guy.
Yeah, I don't know how much he's left in the tank. We'll have to see. And, you know, and then you obviously have Melvin Gordon who can do it for the Chargers. So it's a division to me that's going to rely a lot on the passing game, which, you know, in the AFC West, you think, you know, Raiders, Broncos, grind it out type of stuff. But this is going to be a team that needs to move the ball through the air.
Well, three of the four teams have at least an answer at quarterback. Alex Smith, the jury's still out in terms of whether or not they can really get that passing game going.
He's their starter, though.
No, he's their starter. He's an answer. It's just people are critical of Alex Smith because they don't really have big passing plays within their offense. They tend to rely on the short yardage passes, the running game, the dump offs, and now with no Jeremy Maclin in the mix and really a youthful group, you wonder whether or not they can even get over that hurdle. So Denver is the only team, I would agree with you, that has somewhat of a question mark. Everybody else, you feel good that you can rely on the quarterback making plays throughout the season.
Yeah, and I think the offensive, except for the Raiders, I do think the offensive lines, especially in San Diego and in Denver, are problematic. You know, those are two units I think that really struggled last year. It was the reason, I think, the Chargers went 5-11 and the Broncos just missed the postseason. Their offensive lines couldn't open up room in the running game consistently enough, and both Phillip Rivers and Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch, whoever you want to throw out there, they were under constant pressure. The Chiefs are in a better situation. They have a pretty solid offensive line. They spent money there. They spent resources there. They drafted some guys there. They're in pretty good shape. And then we look at the Raiders, they have one of the best offensive lines in football.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that offensive line, it's up there with Dallas, it's up there with Tennessee. whenever we have conversations about the most consistent top offensive lines, Oakland's a top three offensive line. And clearly, it's arguable, but I mean, in terms of their production, I think they have been doing a great job in terms of protecting the quarterback, establishing the run. Even when Latavius Murray, who was the starting running back for the Raiders last year, he signed with Minnesota this offseason, I really don't think it makes a difference who's in the backfield for Oakland because they're opening up holes, and Derek Carr's a mobile quarterback. And, you know, that goes a long way to helping your team. I mean, look at Tennessee. I'm not trying to get off topic, but big reason why the Titans took a huge jump last season, John, is, you know, people are going to talk about what DeMarco Murray did, but it was their offensive line. They protected Marcus Mariota, and they got the running game going. I think Oakland's taken a very similar path, just like Tennessee.
Absolutely, and you got a couple of really good defenses in the division as well. The Broncos have, in my opinion, is the best defense in football. Very well-rounded, good pass rushers, good corners, a good safety back there. You take a look at the Kansas City Chiefs, even though their numbers last year weren't as good, I think that had a lot to do with a lot of injuries they suffered over the course of the year. Justin Houston missed a lot of time. Derek Johnson missed time during the year. They've lost Dontari Ponau. Those guys should be back and ready to go this year. So I think the Chiefs' defense should be even better this season. And then you mentioned the young talent on the Chargers' defense. They actually played surprisingly well last year. Their numbers look worse because of all the turnovers by the Charger offense, putting teams in good position to score. But the Chargers defense is very strong, and the Raiders defense is young, but it's coming along.
Yeah, the Raiders defense, you have Khalil Mack, as I mentioned, so he's taken huge strides in terms of getting to the quarterback in limited time. I mean, he's only been in the NFL for three seasons. Their secondary, I think there's some question marks there for the Raiders, but
sure,
they at least have some strength in the front seven that you hope that that can at least alleviate the pressure that you're going to put on the secondary. You brought up the Chargers, and I had thrown out Joey Bosa as well as what Melvin Ingram's going to bring to the table. You know, Casey Hayward is a solid corner that they have that they signed from the Packers a few seasons ago. So you take that into consideration, too. They've got playmakers.
Jason Verrett, another guy that's getting healthier.
Yeah, he certainly deserves consideration. There are. They're sprinkled around as opposed to maybe having one dominant unit. The closest to a dominant unit is Denver. Because Denver, the secondary between the safeties and the corners, you love what they have. You've got Von Miller in the front. Everybody else, I think, you've got guys that are going to flash. The question is, do you have a unit that can consistently can make plays? That, I think, is the looming question defensively for the AFC West this season.
All right, let's go to the calls at 201-939-4513. Let's go to Oren in Richmond, Virginia. He's up first. Hi, Oren.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Doing well, Oren. What's up?
I'm just, like, really excited about the season and stuff. And I saw last week one of the Giants players at the field here in Virginia. He played for plays cornerback and stuff, and he was telling me, he tells me that, you know, like Brandon Marshall and like Odell Beckham, he says like the offense is like looking really nice. So those weapons, and Evan Ingram is like a really he's probably gonna be a starter this year.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I mean, they're all very talented. You got a lot of good weapons, and I think people expect if they get the protection they need from the offensive line that the offense can certainly be very explosive. I don't think anyone disagrees with that.
And then, like, I feel like a lot of people forget about, like, how Shane Vereen, how good he was before he got hurt.
Yeah,
Vereen. That's also, like, a weapon right there, because I just don't – that's the only thing I worry about is the offensive line, because I feel like when it comes to, like, covering – It's just linebackers have to pick up the running back and then the tight end and stuff, and then you can't check Odell on one-on-one. And, like, I just feel like that's going to help us out really big and stuff.
Well, I think honestly, at the end of the day, the running game is really going to be the ultimate difference maker. I mean, Shane Vereen keeps the defense guessing, as you alluded to, because he could be a receiver and a running back. But the big issue last season was there was no reason for opposing safeties to come down to the line of scrimmage. And the only way that I see the Giants forcing them to now come down this year is if Paul Perkins and company with the offensive line can really establish the running game. And then all of a sudden, I think what you just laid out opens up for Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall, because now the secondary has to account for the ground game. The Giants didn't really give the opposing secondaries a reason to account for the ground game last season.
Yeah, and what about Mario Williams? You think the Giants will, you know,
no.
like,
no.
looking, picking
no.
him up?
No. No.
Okay.
Warren, they have two very good defensive ends in JPP and Olivier Vernon. There's a reason Mario Williams is out there. He had a terrible year last year. He's on the wrong side of 30. You put all those together, you don't want him on your team.
Plus, remember, they already brought in some veterans, too.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. Appreciate it.
I mean, I think from a depth perspective, yeah, thanks for weighing in, Aaron. They don't really need options on the defensive line. I think they got a nice mix of youth. They have a nice mix of veterans and let the best man win. So there's going to be plenty of competition in camp. That would not be the first position that I would turn to that perhaps the Giants should look at to bring in more personnel.
Dave in Cranford, he's up next. Hi, Dave. Dave going once. Dave going twice.
Man, a very few words today, apparently.
I'm here.
Oh, there's
Dave.
Dave,
what's going on, man?
I'm sorry, guys. I'm here.
Okay. What's up?
Hey, a couple things. Obviously, I say it every time. Love the show. Listen to it all the time. And I want to get a little bit to your interview yesterday with the Cowboys. But before I go there, because I have a question about that, but I want to just talk about the role of Evan Engram in the offense. And I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but it's more about the impact that he can have. And I've seen you guys and other people are doing the same thing in terms of predictions and numbers and all that sort of stuff. But I think there's two things I want you guys to comment on about his impact. He has the chance to have an impact on the offense, even if it's not seen in the stat sheet or just in catches, just because of how defenses are going to have to defend him.
Dave, you're absolutely right, and that's a point that I think Paul Dottino and I made a couple months ago on one of our shows. I don't remember which one. But, yes, I mean, even if Evan Engram's numbers aren't great, and considering all the weapons I'm not sure they're going to be, that's fine. The attention teams are going to have to give him will make it easier for everybody else and should make the offense as a whole work much more efficiently. So I could not agree with you more. I think you're 100% on the money.
And the other comment about him is his blocking. And you know, I think it's been talked about a lot, but I think the thing that people are missing, number one, think about, I forget his name, you guys would probably remember, but the starting middle linebacker as an example for the Atlanta Falcons. This guy's, you know, Deion something or whatever, but the bottom line is, the point is, he's a new generation. The old standard Harry Carson thumping linebackers are not around anymore, you know, and part of the reason they're not around is because of people like Evan Engram. So the game is changing. So my point is, he's not going to be asked to block a D-end. I get that, and you wouldn't want him to. But there's plenty of safeties and corners and linebackers that he's going to mix it up in. And Giants run a lot of cool screens, and his speed is going to be really important to his blocking because he's going to be able to get in better position than Will Tye or Larry Donnell ever got in from a blocking perspective.
Dave, look, here's the bottom line with Engram. He just can't afford to miss assignments, get blown up,
yeah,
and let guys run free to the backfield. If he gets in the way, holds his own, that's all they need him to do, and if he does that, he'll be fine. All right, I get where it goes, Dave.
Yeah.
201-939-4513. I guess we'll try to squeeze in Len in Maryland before we get to our guest. Len, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing
haven't
great.
Talked to
doing
you
right,
in a long time.
How are you?
Yeah, well, yeah, good. Everything is going good. Just a real quick one. I'm looking forward to the first inning of the All-Star game tonight. Scherzer against Judge.
That should be fun.
That's must-see TV.
And you know what, Len?
Oh,
I never watched the Home Run Derby. I think it's boring. I did watch last night. I like the rule change they made with the clock. I think it makes it a lot more entertaining and adds more drama to it.
I would just like to see them award the top guys who actually hit the most home runs in the first round as opposed to the brackets because, I mean, Justin Bour, he would have beaten everybody else, and then he gets ousted in the first round. That's the only thing that I would like
to
see.
To me, I don't see a point in having multiple rounds at all. I know they want to stretch it out to a 2.5-hour event or whatever they want to do. To me, just have six guys go up there, hit once. Whoever hits the most home runs wins.
Yeah,
I'm with
you
Lance
can do
on
that, too. I mean, that I'd be fine with.
You are going to watch that first at-bat, though, aren't you?
I will be watching the All-Star game tonight, yes.
Yeah, that's going to be that's, you know, best pitcher against this, you know, monster home run hitter. That's a made-for-TV thing, no question about it. Listen, back on – let me get over to football real quick because I know you don't have much time with me here. You know, you mentioned of the best offensive lines. Let me just, you know, tongue-in-cheek say the following. How could Oakland have one of the best offensive lines when Marshall Newhouse is on that team? How could it possibly be, John? the Raiders with Marshall Newhouse
was signed as a free agent this offseason.
Don't be surprised if he doesn't start, John.
Yeah, but Marshall Newhouse wasn't on the roster last year. We're talking about their performance last year as an offensive line.
Oh, you're talking about their performance.
Yeah, we were talking about last year. Correct.
Okay. But do you think they improved themselves with Marshall Newhouse?
Well, but here's the thing. If Marshall Newhouse is on the depth chart, you took a starter from another team, and now he's a backup, which is what we were talking about with the Giants bringing in starters from other teams. I mean, I think that helps your depth chart. That's not necessarily any indication of what the starting unit has become. But, if you told me that I'm going to grab a starter from another team in 2016 and he's going to be my swing tackle, I think most teams in the NFL would sign up for that.
And, Len, frankly, even if he does start, and you're right, there is a possibility he does, you're looking at three Pro Bowl caliber offensive linemen around him. If you can throw one guy in with a bunch of other Pro Bowlers, you're still going to have a pretty good line. Look at the Cowboys. They don't know who their fifth offensive lineman is going to be, but whoever it's going to be is going to look a lot better because he's playing next to Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, and Travis Frederick. You know what I mean?
Look, let's just assume for the moment that Marshall Newhouse starts in Oakland. That will be the fourth NFL team that Marshall Newhouse was a starter on. That's pretty good. Now, I'm not trying to say, and I wish we had Marshall Newhouse, that kind of thing, but I'm not sure Marshall Newhouse was as bad as everybody made him out to be.
Hey, Len, do me a favor.
For his fourth NFL team.
Len, do me a favor. We have our guest on the line. If you want, we can put you back on hold and bring you back after the guest. Is that all right?
Hey, John, I'll call you later in the week.
Okay, that's fine.
Sounds good, Mitch.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Len. Appreciate it. All right, let's get to Mitch Holthus, play-by-play Kansas City Chiefs. He's the voice you hear on the radio. Mitch, you got John Schmelk and Lance Meadow here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How are you enjoying your peaceful summer before the madness begins?
Well, we're getting on warp speed. You know, the NFL never really shuts down. I'm trying to figure out when the off season is. This is the closest thing to a plant shutdown right now. But still, we've been busy because we just hired a new general manager yesterday. And so this thing is just we're ready to hop, skip, and jump right into the season, starting camp. In just several days here.
Yeah, you know, Mitch, I think everyone was kind of surprised that there was a change at general manager. Can you kind of take us through what the thinking was there, why the change went down, and tell us a little about the new man in the position?
Clark Hunt has done a very good job. Guys, we go back to December 31, 2012, and the Chiefs were algae on the Titanic. I mean, they had reached rock bottom at 2-14, no wins over an AFC team. That had never happened in franchise history. And guys, as you know, this is a very proud franchise. Well, Clark Hunt won the sweepstakes of seven teams that were trying to get Andy Reid. And John Dorsey came in shortly after Andy Reid, and John did a good job here. I think it's just a matter of what is the next step from administration and cap management and jumping into the next level. And that's kind of what they decided to do with Brett Veach. Brett has been involved for 11 years with Andy Reid, dating back to the time with the Eagles. And so they feel like this is a jump ahead with an up-and-coming young executive who has more experience, maybe even from an administrative and cap standpoint.
Well, and then on top of that, Mitch, I think it's interesting when you look at Brett Veach's path to get to this position, considering he was a football player in the past as well. But I think you hit on an important note, and that's continuity. And I think that relates to the Giants as well, these historical franchises that have been around for so long. Even when they make changes, there's rationale behind it, but it's also important for them to perhaps promote somebody from within as opposed to shake things up and bring somebody in from the outside. How much did that perhaps play a role in terms of the Chiefs at least looking internally?
Well, it's well stated by you. I mean, this team has won 44 games in 4 years. That has not happened that consistently in a generation. And you really have to go back to Stram and Dawson and, you know, the glory days of when it transformed from the AFL to the merger in the 69-70 time, where the Chiefs have been this good for this long and this consistent. Guys, they're 11-1 in the AFC West the last 2 years. I think if you had a quiz around people that follow the NFL, that would be somewhat of a surprising stat.
Yep.
The Chiefs haven't broken through. They haven't broken through to the next level of playoffs. But the consistency is here. And it's something that, you know, I've clamored for in my room for 24 years as the voice of the Chiefs. The Chiefs need to be the AFC version of the Packers or the teams that are always in the hunt. They never drop to 3-13 or 2-14. They're never too old. They're never too young. And they've got continuity of staff here. This is an outstanding staff with the Chiefs. And so they're in the hunt again to win in the AFC. I heard your caller talking about the Raiders. And, you know, hey, they're good. I get it. This division's good. Derek Carr's four worst games, guys, look it up. Are the Chiefs, the Chiefs, the Chiefs, and the Chiefs. I mean, people are not giving the Chiefs, I don't think, enough credit. But they're going to be ringing on the doorbell again, and they're just fine coming under the radar. They're not the April champions that the Raiders have been. But that's fine. They want to be, you know, they want to jump to the next level. But this is a well-coached team and a team that has got a good there's a good base to it all throughout the organization.
Yeah, Mitch, and look, Giant fans know all about Andy Reid. In fact, Andy Reid's Eagles were the last team to actually win the NFC East in back-to-back years. So he knows how to create and maintain a consistent winner. And when I took a look at the roster moves the Chiefs made this offseason, there really aren't a ton of changes. You didn't add a ton of guys. You bring in Benny Logan. He replaces Dontari Poe. You know, Jamaal Charles barely played last year anyway. And then the team makes the decision for salary cap purposes to let go of Jeremy Maclin. So it looks like the Chiefs have got to be pretty happy with where they're at because they're bringing back almost the same team.
Okay. As Giants fans, they'll recognize and appreciate this. The consistent winning teams build their teams of guys getting better. You draft well, and then they improve year by year by year. Free agency and a lot of offseason additions are really only spackling or maybe finished carpentry. The best teams have guys that progress forward. I'm going to tell you, there's an up-and-coming star on this team going from year one. There's two of them, actually, year one to year two. One is fairly well-known in Tyreek Hill. He's the fastest player in the National Football League. He was clocked at 23 miles an hour in pads. I mean, it's ridiculous how fast the guy is and how explosive he is. The other is Chris Jones, second year to Mississippi State. He's on the verge. If you look at those great Giant linemen in the past, he's got that wingspan, explosiveness, can come off the edge and still play the run. That's where things kind of get hidden because the free agency and the shopping during the February, March, and April get on the headlines. But really the consistent winning teams build and develop stars within their own system.
Well, and I think that was well demonstrated for the Chiefs in this year's draft in terms of them targeting perhaps their next starting running back in the third round and then in the first round moving up to get Patrick Mahomes. And speaking of the media, there's always that speculation, Mitch, when you draft a quarterback, perhaps is there a quarterback competition emerging, even though Alex Smith is a very polished veteran. Is there any perhaps chance that Patrick Mahomes spices things up, or has Alex Smith pretty much at least solidified his position for this season?
Well, Alex is the fourth winningest quarterback in the league since 2011. That's another stat that people, again, he's got a buster in the playoffs, but he was on the verge of doing that in San Francisco. He drops two punts against you guys. He didn't drop it. Kyle Williams did. I mean, you go back to 11, and Giant fans well know that win against the 49ers, but there's two drop punts in that game.
Yeah.
Really, the 49ers kind of had control of that game. I know Giants fans may beg to differ.
No, you're right.
No, you're right. Mitch, no disagreement.
I mean, think about it. Go back and look. I mean, Alex is playing great. He gets to the Super Bowl. He's not the Chiefs quarterback. But then he goes to 12. He's 7-2-1, and Harbaugh replaces him with Kaepernick. So then he comes here, and he's won 40-some games. I mean, so he's the guy. Now, here's what's happened. You know, the news is that for the first time in 37 years, the Chiefs draft their future quarterback in the first round, and they move up. They move up 17 spots, and it's somewhat expensive. They think Patrick Mahomes II is the guy in the future, but that's two key prepositional phrases here. And this market in the Chiefs' kingdom has not done this. They've never had the young guy apprenticing over the old guy. It's the whole Karate Kid thing, right? but some of the best teams do that. But to do that, you've got to understand the discipline that's involved. That doesn't mean every time Alex Smith throws a pick, you're clamoring for the young guy to come in. Patrick Mahomes II is not ready right now. And here's what he may have to be ready to do. And you guys know this. The Wikipedia definition of a backup quarterback in this league is they must be able to win a meaningful game, at least one. Last year, the Chiefs had Nick Foles. They got him for a one-year deal. And Foles came in for Alex Smith in the second half of the Indianapolis game and then won the Jacksonville game playing the whole game. Otherwise, the Chiefs don't win the AFC West without that. Mahomes isn't the guy. He's in the on-deck circle. But he may have to be the guy if injury puts him in that position. That will be the key job of training camp, is to get Mahomes not only ready for the future, whether that's 18, 19, or 20, but to be ready to win a game in the 2017 season.
You know, Mitch, and we're joined by Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Kansas City Chiefs. One thing I want to ask about, Mitch, is I think the Chiefs are a solid team. I think they're very well run. I think they'll be good again this year. One thing, looking at last year's numbers, does worry me a little bit in terms of the Chiefs repeating their performance. And I want to throw it at you and see what you think. Last year, the Chiefs were tied for the best turnover margin in the league at plus 16. In my experience, turnover margin does have a lot to do with talent and scheme, no disagreement, but I do think there is also a certain amount of good fortune involved in terms of opponents dropping interceptions, you know, balls getting tipped, things of that nature. Do you think they can repeat that type of performance? And if they don't, if that gets closer to, you know, a plus one or a plus two, can the Chiefs still finish with the type of record they need to win the AFC West?
I will agree and I'll disagree. So here's where I'll agree with you. I understand that stat and the dynamics that are involved. And the other thing is, you look at eight non-offensive touchdowns. They scored. Tyreek Hill was a maniac on special teams. So they're running back kicks and punts, and they had some big pick sixes. Barry had a, you know, Barry's a phenomenal story. But they're very explosive on defense. Now, here's where I will disagree with you. Do a four-year study. Do a four-year study of 13, 14, 15, 16. This wasn't a one-year anomaly and some comet flying out of the sky. This has become a way of life for this team. And you see it, though, and you've seen it with the Giants. When it becomes a way of life and you have a Navy SEAL kind of defense that pries the ball loose and does it on a consistent basis, it's not a luck. It's not a luck situation. It's a way of life. Yeah, the ball has to bounce differently and so forth. But I'm going to tell you, these guys are wired to win a game in special teams, kind of Virginia Tech, K-State style, to give a collegiate example, because they win games in inventive ways. That has not changed in 4 years.
Hey, you know, Mitch,
study.
Mitch, you're absolutely right. Okay. I just looked at the numbers. Last year, plus 16, plus 14 the year before, and in 2013, they were plus 18. There was only 1 year in there where there were minus three. So you're right. That is a consistent part of their performance. And thank you for referencing that. I did not realize that when I did my research before the interview. I think that's a great point.
No, you did great research to do it, and you bring up an excellent point. Now, here's where I will tell you, I think the biggest weakness of this team, and it'll be a problem against the Giants and the Cowboys in cross-pollinating against the NFC East. One advantage the Chiefs had the last time they did this, which was in 2013, the Giants came to Arrowhead. The Cowboys came to Arrowhead. The Chiefs had to play the Eagles on a Thursday night and Andy's return home. That was crazy. And then the Chiefs blew out the Redskins. But here was the advantage. Andy had game plan against those teams for, 13 years in the NFC East.
Yeah.
So now there's some separation, yeah. 13 to 16, to 17, I should say. But now they cross-pollinate again. Here's the problem for the Chiefs as they cross-pollinate, especially against the Giants and the Cowboys. Look at the stats. The Chiefs' weakest spot last year, they were 32nd in the league of runs allowed of 4 yards or more. Now, they were great in the red zone, meaning you could run the ball to the 20, but then they would stop you and you'd take a field goal. That's a problem because teams dictated the game to them, the teams that emphasized the run. Go back and look at their five losses. The Chiefs were 12-5 last year. They lost. They were upset by the Bucs 19-17. They were upset by the Titans 19-17. They were beaten twice by the Steelers, and they were beaten by the Texans early in the season in Houston.
Yeah.
What's the common denominator of those five teams? They run the ball and control the game by running the ball. They'll pass, they'll run to set up the pass, but they control and dictate the game. They control time of possession. And if you don't take it away in one of those takeaways that you talked about, then all of a sudden you're playing their game. They're declaring Trump. And the Chiefs have got to be – I mean, Trump as it relates to cards, not politics.
Oh, yes, yes.
But here's the point. You've got to be better against the run. You cannot give up four-plus runs on first and second down and not get upset or dictate the game when you play the Giants or Cowboys, particularly on the road where they play those two teams this year. That's the biggest issue for the Chiefs, making a jump forward and winning an AFC or hosting an AFC championship game or getting to a Super Bowl.
Well, and that's one of the things the Giants are trying to improve upon, establishing their abilities in the trenches, specifically on offense, because they took huge strides last season in terms of stopping the run. As we're talking with Mitch Holthus, radio play-by-play voice for the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, another thing that's been a big focus statistically for the Chiefs, Mitch, over the last few seasons, and maybe it hasn't been as consistent of a trend as with the turnover ratio, has been the receiving game. And Jeremy Maclin's not there anymore, and I'm looking, you know, 3 years ago, no touchdown passes to a wide receiver, as you well know. Maclin arrives then in 15. He gets 8 of the 12 touchdown passes to wide receivers. Last season, he was banged up. I think that was well documented. And while they still have weapons, Tyreek Hill certainly is in the mix. A lot of youth within the receiving core. How significant of a loss is Jeremy Maclin, even if it was done for financial reasons? But is there enough on this team and this receiving core to fill that void?
It's a great question. It's the second biggest issue facing this team, other than its run defense and not letting teams dictating games to them. And that is, they need a chain mover. There's enough explosive plays in this offense. First of all, Andy Reid is very underrated in the way he can create plays. I mean, he's a little bit of a mad scientist. He's hard to defend. And one of the interesting things about your game is he'll have his old assistant, Steve Spagnuolo, defending against him, you know, as your defensive coordinator. But they need chain movers. They need a 3rd and 7, get 9 yards. They need a 3rd and 6, get 8 yards. And that's win the battle against the defensive back and get it done. They don't have that right now on this team. Maclin did it in 14. He had a phenomenal year. Okay in 15, not much in 16. So there's guys that have to step up and do that. Chris Conley, in his 3rd year, run a big wide receiver out of Georgia, would be the guy. There's enough big plays, and Travis Kelce is the – you know, he's an even more kind of an explosive version of Gronk. Maybe not quite as strong, but he's very skilled. He's a wide receiver and a tight end body. So there's enough big plays. But they've got to be better in converting 3rd down and medium and just receivers winning plays and making tough catches. That has to be done. They really haven't done it in the 4 years that Andy's been here, sans 14, when Maclin was getting it done for them.
Mitch, do you think Kareem Hunt, your draft pick, is going to snatch that number one running back spot, or is it going to be a three-headed monster with him, Spencer Ware, and Charcendrick West?
It's an algebraic equation. Actually, there's several. It's several. It's like a quadratic equation to put a little algebra in there, because Tyreek Hill's he's going to be in the run game too.
That's true.
He's going to be moving around all over the place. And take a look at his run against Oakland last year on Thursday night, where he lined up as a running back and hit him for 70-some yards. Okay, Spencer Ware is one of the more underrated players in the NFL. Charcendrick West came out of nowhere and is a very effective player for this team. But I was going to go shh on Kareem Hunt, because he now becomes a potential secret weapon. He is a kid out of Toledo, highly productive player. And when the Chiefs drafted him, they traded up to get him as well. They think he brings an element that they have not had. And that is a little bit of a power run game, a zone runner, you know, that one-step zone run game.
Yep.
I mean, you see it too often with the Cowboys. And we've seen it when the Broncos have good teams. It's that unique ability to take the one step. Do I go play side or I cut it back against the defense? And do I have the ability to do that instinctively? This kid does. He's one of the best one-step runners I've seen come out of college in a long time. He's a bit of a hidden weapon.
You have to win in the trenches, as you brought up earlier, Mitch, and part of that is running the football, but the flip side is also winning the battles on the defensive side. And as we mentioned, when you look at the Chiefs offseason, they didn't do a lot of movement, but I think maybe one of the biggest benefits for them is getting guys back healthy. Justin Houston missed significant time because of the ACL, and then Derek Johnson tears his Achilles late last season. What's the outlook of those two players, and how much do you think Kansas City can say, you know what, there's a good chance we're going to have both of those guys back for all 6 games?
I'll throw in another one, and he's not as sexy, but he's going to be nearly as important, and that is Alan Bailey, a big physical run defender, you know, kind of a two-gap player that's very good. He got hurt, missed most of the season last year, and it hurt the run defense. Houston, when he's up and running, so to speak, can be dominant, both against the run and holding the edge, and he's a phenomenal pass rusher. Keep in mind, he was a half sack short of Strahan's record. When he was dominating in 2014, he was unblockable. And he went into the last game, the last quarter of the last game, and was ready to break the all-time NFL sack record of Strahan. So since then, he's been plagued by injuries. He thinks he's going to be ready to go by camp in St. Joe on the 28th or whatever it is of July. So, you know, we'll see. But I think he, when he's there, man, he's just dominant. And can be, people have kind of forgotten about him just because he's been off the grid with the injuries. But when he's on it, he's on it. Now, also, you know, D Ford is a key guy that improved a lot last year. But he's going to have to be a big part of playing the edge in this defense. It's not just rushing the passer at that spot. It's the hardest position to play on this defense because you have to do everything. But the big thing you have to do is hold the edge on the perimeter.
Mitch, final question for me. The Giants get the, and I'll say this sarcastically, pleasure of getting to face Andy Reid off of the bye week, which has not gone well for most teams in the National Football League. 16-3 following that playoff loss to the Steelers last year, which technically is off the bye because the Chiefs got the number two seed. Why is Andy Reid so darn good coming off bye weeks?
Because he's really, I think he's underrated as in his ingenuity. He has spent all spring and summer thinking about how to get Tyreek Hill the ball. Being around him, he's kind of the Russell Crowe character in A Beautiful Mind. You seriously walk into his office and there's all these equations and, you know, it's like, wow, physics and trigonometry. And, I mean, he is a thinker and he's underrated. I know the Philly people still get grouchy about some things, but I'm like, well, thank you. I want to send them all to you, all the Eagle fans, every day going, thank you, thank you, thank you, because now we have Andy Reid. And he really is a three-dimensional depth thinker and probably game planning, but being inventive. And I think when he gets that little extra time, that he uses that to the max of his ability. You know, it's going to be – we're out there twice in 3 weeks because we also play in the AFC East through cross-scheduling. And so I think we're just going to stay out there and come back and play a home game against the Bills and go right back because we have the Jets right after you guys.
Oh, wow.
But it's going to be interesting. Yeah, we go to Gotham 2 times in 3 weeks, or Jersey. And so I guess we're looking forward to it. But Andy likes playing the NFC East. There's too much, you know, there's too much sweat equity there in almost 15 years of trying to compete against the Cowboys, Giants, Skins, and Eagles that he doesn't get fired up when he goes against those teams. It's always fun.
Well, and Mitch, you mentioned earlier that the gap has widened a little bit because the Chiefs haven't played the NFC East, but I think what maybe helped brings that gap back a little bit is the fact that now Doug Peterson's the head coach of the Eagles, and he was the offensive coordinator under Andy Reid not too long ago.
Oh, that's going to be your second big game on the radar. Now, we opened the season against New England to open up the all season. You know, we get the game against the defending world champions. And so you're like the cannon fodder in the Coliseum. You know, here come the Lions, and then you get thrown out there. Well, we'll be ready for those guys, too. We'll go in there swinging. But the next game is the Chiefs home opener the following Sunday in week two against the Eagles, and Doug Peterson comes back. And that will be festive at Arrowhead. There'll be Doug's old friends waiting for him, about 75,000, and the earth will shake.
Mitch,
feel it in the Hudson. It'll go backwards for just 3 hours.
It'll travel up I-95. Yes. That sounds good. Mitch, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for the time today, and we'll see you during the year, my friend.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mitch.
We'll see you in November.
Thanks, Mitch. Mitch Holthus, play-by-play man for the Kansas City Chiefs, did a good job there. I think very, very high on the season, very high in the team. But he did point out some of the things that he thinks could short-circuit him, the wide receiver position being one, Chris Conley having to step in for Jeremy Maclin. And then, of course, he mentioned the run defense last year, which, you know, when I thought about the Chiefs last year, just thinking about the team that I saw and watched over the course of the year, you didn't get the feeling that they were bad against the run. But when you take a look at their actual numbers during the year, Lance, they did struggle. They gave up more than 121 yards per game on the ground, 4.4 rushing yards per play. So they did struggle stopping the run, and I wonder how much that had to do with Derek Johnson's injury.
Well, I think that was a big part of it, though Derek Johnson got hurt in December. So
oh, you know what? I
don't think it
that.
Swung it
point.
That much. I think it may – but you remember, all it takes is if you have 3 or 4 rough games in the month of December, that could throw the numbers off.
Well,
so I'm not saying that that's wrong.
Justin Houston loss is also in the mix there.
But Houston started the season on pup. He didn't come back until the middle of the year.
Right. And wasn't the same guy.
And let's face it, Dontari Poe was not really the same player he was last season, too. That's, I think, part of the reason why they're okay with him leaving to go to Atlanta, and they brought in Benny Logan.
And he's a good player.
The former Eagle. So, yeah, it was some movement. There were some injuries. I think that was a big reason. I mean, just to put it in perspective, I was looking at those same numbers. Kansas City finished 26th in the NFL against the run.
Is that yards per game or yards
per carry? That's yards per game.
Yards per game.
So just over 121 per game. Then if you look at yards per carry, you brought up the number was 4.4. Let's see. That put them in the rankings overall in the NFL. As we move down here the list, Kansas City was tied for 20th.
Okay.
So, you know, you're talking about bottom of the rankings in both of those categories. They're going to have to clean that up. Part of that, I think, though, is not necessarily, well, who they bring in. It's more of getting guys back to full health. And Kansas City is in very good shape secondary-wise. Eric Berry is one of the best safeties in the NFL. Marcus Peters, tremendous young corner.
Interception machine.
Yeah, Ron Parker's even a veteran safety. I like their weapons, but like anything else, you got to win the battles in the trenches. And to me, Houston and Derek Johnson, can the two of them stay healthy? Then Kansas City is going to be a force. If they're dealing with injuries here or there and you have to rely on the backups, that could obviously give Kansas City some early season struggles.
And I didn't ask Mitch this question, but I do think that the Chiefs are taking somewhat of a calculated risk in their draft strategy this year, trading two picks to pick a quarterback that's not going to contribute this year at all. So that's a loss. The guys they could have added in the draft with those selections that would have made the team better are not on the roster. Not to say they did the wrong thing. If this quarterback develops and it becomes a starter and a Pro Bowler in 3 or 4 years, it's the right selection. But you do take a chance in not helping your team as much this year for drafting somebody down the road.
Well, it's the balance of both worlds. I think Kansas City's rationale, John, was we felt good about our starters.
Right.
So the focus is now we need to rebuild up the depth chart. And then when you look at, I mean, he mentioned Chris Jones, who's a young guy. Dee Ford's another young guy.
Well, internal development. That's what
he
mentioned.
I mean, they feel as if over the last few years they've drafted well enough that now they were at the point where they could take the risk. And here's the thing. You can't judge a draft until you go 3 or 4 years removed. But just think about this. If we now move the calendar forward 3, 4 years from now, and we say that Kansas City wound up finding its successor at quarterback at Patrick Mahomes and its successor, remember, Kareem Hunt was their third-round pick this year out of Toledo, two key positions on offense, they may have solidified in the wake of when Alex Smith moves on and Spencer Ware, they're already starting to phase out.
And they could have found a defensive end on defense, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you try to pronounce that name, by the way.
No, I think I'm going to pass.
Oh, come on. Yes. You're very good at it. Give
I
it a
am,
shot.
But I
oh, come on, Lance. I'm going to do it if you don't. Give it a shot.
Nunez Rochas? Is that what we're talking about? Which one guy are we talking about?
That was the other guy.
They got the guy they got it playing in front of him. They got a couple of
Tano Passignon?
Yes.
Well, Tano.
I like the way that you're having it flow off your tongue. I'm still honing my craft.
Wow.
With respect to that department.
You coward.
I'm not a coward. It's just
you're a broadcaster.
I understand
the name of
that,
shot.
But luckily he doesn't play for the Giants, so I only have to deal with him one time a year.
Wow. At least.
And plus, he's not a starter at this point. I think you're jumping the gun. It's like you trying to get me to name the fifth linebacker on the team. Let's at least throw a guy in the mix that is going to contribute.
Pick?
Yeah, but second round picks don't necessarily always play that much. It depends.
That's the Villanova kid, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So, but that was good. Tano, you apparently
passing on.
The K being silent.
I believe the K is
silent. I believe you are correct, yes. It's always one of those tongue twisters where you're thrown off by that first letter, and then you realize that first letter is irrelevant because it's not even part of the pronunciation.
Pronouncing Frank Ntilikina has given me help because he also has the silent K at the start of the
correct.
Name.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of those guys referring to what could be the Knicks' new starting point guard, depending on what else happens this offseason. So, very nice watching you get so frustrated on Twitter, though.
It went from happiness to frustration. It was, I did enjoy seeing you get a really note about the Bulls training.
Well,
Butler,
I moved on from that. I mean, obviously we're removed. Yours is a little bit more.
It's
new.
Fresher.
Yes,
it's fresher.
So that's the big difference.
Anyways, 201-939-4513. We'll take your calls the rest of the show. Thank you guys for holding. We'll get to you right now. Let's go to Adam in New Jersey first. Adam, you've been holding the longest. Hello.
How you doing, John and Lance? How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Adam. How are you?
I'm great, great. I just want to touch on two things. I really called about Devin Taylor.
Sure.
But I want to talk about 11 personnel real quick.
Go ahead.
I know that Giant fans don't want to hear this, but last year, obviously, the 11 personnel didn't work, right? Well, I think the reason why it didn't work is because we didn't have, no pun intended, the personnel to run it. Now we have Evan Engram and Brandon Marshall who replace, obviously, Larry Donnell and Victor Cruz. Now, I'm not saying I want to run this consistently, but if you bring back Shane Vereen, they do have they can incorporate that into the package more, and everybody will be a threat on the field. So maybe they can bust the cover two here in 11 personnel when they go hurry up. I just wanted to mention that because someone was talking about Evan Engram, and that's where I think he's really going to factor in. Well, when, you know, you're in the 11 personnel, we couldn't beat cover two. Well, guess what? Now you can't shade over to Odell's side. Last year you obviously couldn't Victor Cruz couldn't get off one-on-one coverage, so they bracketed Sterling Shepard, which left them with Larry Donnell, who and Will Ty, who, let's be honest, didn't really do much for the team. But now you can't really do that. You don't have that same dynamic on the field. So I think that's going to open them up in 11 personnel if they decide to use that. Obviously, I don't want them to use it like they did last year 90% of the time, but I just wanted to touch base on that.
Well, I mean, Adam, real quick. I mean, I think the personnel last year, 11 personnel was their best personnel group. I don't think they had the personnel to do anything else. They didn't have a fullback, so you can't run 21 personnel. You didn't have good tight ends, so you couldn't run 12 personnel. So I think based on the talent on their roster, that was the way to go. And I think their lack of overall success on the offense had more to do with the fact that their offensive line didn't give that 11 personnel a chance to be successful running the ball specifically out of that formation. And I think you talked a lot about them passing out of that, but it is also important if you go 11 personnel to run out of that formation. And
right, and
I do think the Red Ellison addition will, and putting him at tight end in some of those 11 personnel packages, and Brandon Marshall is also an excellent blocker, will give you a chance to run better out of that personnel group. Because if you can't run out of a certain personnel group, like Lance said earlier in the show, and you can't force a safety to come up close to the line of scrimmage, it's going to be difficult to throw out of it. So I think the first step in making 11 personnel more efficient is being able to run out of that, and I think once you do that, everything else works a lot better.
Oh, great, great, great. But I think they've upgraded all those positions, obviously, with Perkins.
Absolutely.
You know,
we agree.
And, yeah, we do. So let me get on to Devin Taylor. I know that you did a fact or fiction about him recently on the website, and I really wanted to touch base because last year, I do love Romeo Okwara, but what we lacked in that Green Bay game minus a slot corner to replace DRC was a third pass rusher. So, obviously, you saw the numbers. The numbers don't lie, you know. Olivier Vernon got double-teamed. Okwara had a couple pressures, but nothing crazy. What I think Devin Taylor will allow you to do is, and now I don't need him to have a big sack number, but to have a threat on the defensive line that you know is going to come in and possibly, you know, go against the guard who might be not the best on the offensive line and give us some interior pass rush here and there and a third defensive end to give the other guys a blow with experience, I think it's going to help down the road in big games. You know, we know that Okwara came to play against the Cowboys, but against Green Bay, they had film on him. Now, I'm not saying Devin Taylor is, you know, the next LT. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is when you have a legit third option in that defensive line, end rotation, and people can have to respect Devin Taylor. But, you know, Romeo Okwara, they're like, all right, you know, we don't have to really worry too much about him because he's not going to create too much havoc. Now, if you put Romeo Okwara in and Devin Taylor in the game, this is going to free up more opportunities for those guys. So I just wanted to, I think he is signing. If he stays healthy, I know that he was, you guys talked with the guy from the Lions and they didn't really give him a glowing review, but, you know, I think that he's going to really help out with the rotation, and I think he's going to help out with the experience factor in terms of just having that ace in the hole, so to speak, to bring out, like, all right, you know what, NASCAR package, let's do it. It's third and 15. You know, let's do that and have him, you know, attack the quarterback, which also brings me to another point about Devin Taylor is you'll free up Devin Kennard so he can rush without his hand in the dirt. I think him standing up being a pass rusher from the outside is going to help this team as well. Not that he didn't do a good job as a defensive end, but imagine if you could have him now take those skills that he developed as a defensive end. And with Devin Taylor, you can keep that linebacker and have him blitz a little bit more. I think that is going to help the defense overall. And that's just my comment on Devin Taylor.
Well, I would agree with your sentiments about his experience. I mean, you can't duplicate that. And Romeo Okwara, even 00, when they were trying to maybe see if he could take on a bigger role, he didn't have nearly as much experience. So
thank you, Adam. Appreciate
the flash here or there for one game, but then the question is when the opposition starts making adjustments against you, do you have enough experience to then counter that? Devin Taylor has an edge in that department. Whether or not, you know, all of this translates to the field remains to be seen, but I don't think it ever hurts you when you have some experienced pass rushers that have seen a variety of different offensive lines and schemes. That's certainly a bonus. I mean, Kerry Wynn, I wouldn't overlook either. He's an experienced pass rusher, too. And as far as Devin Kennard is concerned, he flashed late last season when they started to experiment with him coming down a little bit more towards the line of scrimmage. So he's more of that jack-of-all-trades type of player where I can think that they'll continue to utilize him in both positions this season.
Yeah, a couple things. I like Taylor. I think he's going to be a good addition. I don't think he's like a dynamic edge, you know, beat the guy around the corner type of pass rusher. I think he's a solid two-way player. I think he's too tall to be sent inside as a three technique. I think you're more than likely to see, you know, either JPP or OV go in there, and you leave Taylor outside if you want to go in that direction. In my opinion, I didn't see them put Taylor at any of the defensive tackle spots during the spring practices. So I'm not sure if that's, you know, in the making. Maybe we'll be in training camp. We'll see. I think he's a great addition. In terms of Okwara specifically, I look at him the same way I looked at Kerry Wynn off his rookie year, where everybody was starting to throw parades and this guy's going to be the next great defensive end. The second year is the tough part. Not that the first year was easy, but the second year, like you said, Adam, and your line was a little bit loud. That's why we had to let you go. But they don't have tape on you, and you can catch some people by surprise and do some stuff, but can you continue that in your second year? Can you get better? Can you improve? Can you bring it to the next level? We'll see if Okwara can do that this year, and he'll have to prove it. And, you know, Kerry Wynn stuck around a few years, but I don't think he's been as impactful as he was his rookie year yet, and we'll see if Okwara can, you know, continue that momentum into his second season.
Sample size is small,
yeah.
And I understand from a fan's perspective, I think you bring up an excellent point, John. It's easy to get overly excited when you see one guy do what he did, and credit to Romeo Okwara. That was a huge game against
sure.
the Dallas Cowboys. JPP's hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going up against one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, and Okwara was a huge spark plug.
He had his way with Doug Free, a good veteran right tackle.
Helped stop the run, got to Dak Prescott, flustered him, and when they needed him to step up, he delivered. But in the NFL, it's not just about being a flash or a gamer here. It's about, can the defensive coaching staff say, when we put you in, we know what we're going to get out of you each and every game. That's the type of statement that Okwara needs to make this season. And I still think that the writing is on the wall for even a guy like Kerry Wynn, who you brought up, about him also still having the opportunity to prove. When they put Kerry Wynn into pass-rushing situations, or they put him in on any other downs, is he going to be the guy that's going to deliver? The one thing, though, I will say about Kerry Wynn that I feel confident about, much more so than Okwara, John, is when Wynn moves inside, I think they feel good that he's got enough experience there in stopping the run. Maybe there's not as much consistency in terms of him being a true pass rusher, but he's got a significant edge on Okwara because they know if we move him inside to the defensive tackle spot, we're pretty much content that he knows our scheme.
Yeah, there are a few things that you don't worry about with Kerry Wynn. One is effort,
yeah,
being in the right place at the right time, knowing the scheme, all that stuff he's very good at, and that's why he's here. 201-939-4513. Shreys is in Massachusetts, pardon me. He held through that entire interview. Hi, Shreys.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
What's up, John Lance? All right, man. So I wanted to talk about, first of all, you guys had a great guest over. That was great. The whole part was great. I think he brought up excellent points about the Chiefs. I mean, if you look at the team, they really have no weakness. Their one weakness, as you guys pointed out, was their one semi-weakness was their run defense. But now you have the one guy in the league other than Damon Harrison who can possibly solve that problem at nose tackle, who is Benny Logan. He was amazingly efficient when put in the right role at Philadelphia. The year before, not this past year, but the year before this year, he was actually, according to Pro Football Focus, which again it's not the football Bible or anything, but he was very, very effective. So the Chiefs are actually going to be much better than they were last year, which is scary because they were really good last year.
Well, I would agree. I don't mean to cut you off, Trace. I agree with you that I think that they subtly made some moves that get overlooked because they're not the big-name commodities, but they get the job done.
Right.
I still think, though, the Chiefs' offense is always going to be the wild card because you did remove Jeremy Maclin from the equation, and you are banking on some of the young guys developing, and you're also banking on a running game that has revolved around a variety of different running backs over the last few seasons. So while I agree with you, I don't think the defense is going to fall off much, but if you're expecting Kansas City to win games perhaps 17-15 and scoring 19 points a game, you know, that's risky because you're eventually going to give up some plays.
You know, I'm going to jump in here too, and I think when I did the research on the Chiefs, I was really surprised by this. Last year, the Chiefs were 20th in the NFL in yards per game on offense, right? They were 24th in the league in yards allowed per game on defense. That's brutal. That is a bad number. And given all the talent on that team, I was surprised to see that. Now, they made up for that in a couple of different ways. I mentioned the turnover differential.
Huge.
That's a huge one. They were plus 16. And
plus
again,
16 is
they've
amazing.
Done that three out of the last 4 years. So much credit to that. But last year, they were 31st in the league in sack rate, mostly because of Justin Houston's absence. So they couldn't get to the quarterback, but they were 5th in the NFL in red zone percentage. So they were very much a turn the team over, force them into field goals, and try to win football games that way. Can they sustain those periphery numbers, the takeaways, the red zone, and things like that, giving up all those yards, not sacking the quarterback, or can their returning healthy players now turn that around? So I do think there is some margin of error here for the Chiefs, especially defensively, because I think those takeaways really masked a lot of real issues they had on that side of the ball last year.
And then on top of that, the Tyreek Hill special teams touchdowns.
He mentioned eight of them.
Yeah, I love Hill, and I don't think he's going to fall off. But
that didn't happen.
You can't expect that to happen. And then Dontari Poe scored a few touchdowns. They used him on the goal line in different formations. I remember he caught a touchdown late in the season against Denver where Andy Reid had him in the fullback position.
Didn't he throw one?
He may have even thrown one.
I think
he jumped
it
over
and then
the line. You're right.
He threw one.
So I mean, you know, he's not even on the roster anymore. Listen, they could always use different personnel, but that is a huge X factor that you can't bank on. So I agree with you. I still think, Shreys, your point is right about the Chiefs are very strong. They've been a consistent unit. There's some wild cards here. Can that be duplicated in 2017?
Yeah. One number that I've got to bring up, though.
Sure.
Last year, Tyreek Hill, given that he had limited touches, but in one of every 11 touches that he got offensively, he scored a touchdown.
One of every 11, huh? That is a good number.
That's what happens when you can play running back, wide receiver, and special teams.
Shreys, we got to run, man. Go ahead. Finish up. What do you got?
All right, so that's why I think they got rid of Jeremy Maclin, is to give more touches to Tyreek Hill. Because if you can score on one of 11 touches, then why not just give him more opportunities and see what you get?
Well,
and
but
that's
the question is whether or not, and again, Shreys, thanks for the call. The question is whether or not you think he can repeat that performance, which I would think is somewhat unlikely.
Yeah, but I also don't necessarily buy into the fact that's like saying that the Giants don't need any help for Odell Beckham because he's so explosive too. But you still need to take attention away from Odell Beckham, so that's the purpose of having Brandon Marshall and Sterling Shepard. You can never have enough talent and wide receivers on the field simultaneously.
Charlie, I'm not going to play your open because we're right at the end of the show, and I want to give you a much time to express your sentiments to Lance Meadow.
And that's not a disappointment for the rest of the listeners and viewers, the fact that you're not playing the open. How
hey
we doing,
guys,
Charlie?
How
people
you bet?
Like
you
the
have
open.
A good time off,
except
I hope.
For you. Yes, well. Say that again, Charlie. I'm sorry. I tend to tune you out when you're on this program, so.
Hey, all you have to say, Lance, is K-Pass. That's all you got to say. K-Pass. That's his name. That's what he goes by. So it's good. You don't even have to pronounce it all.
Oh, okay. I see. The nickname.
No, Charlie, don't make it easier for him. Lance is a professional broadcaster.
Owo Digizua rolls off my tongue.
Well, first of all, you should go with his full first name if you really want to challenge yourself.
Well, no. Owo is fine, all right?
Owamabe. Odigizua. Thank you very much.
I think he has agreed that that's acceptable. But anyway, continue, Charlie. Yes.
Okay, I have a formation. I call it Catch 22. X4.
The hell does that mean?
All right. Well,
he actually has me interested to listen to what he has to say.
All right. Because we're facing so many great defensive ends and pass rushes this year, we're going to have mass protect.
Okay.
So this formation has two tight ends, which would be Rhett and LaCrosse or Adams, whichever one makes the team and whichever one's the better blocker. And you're going to have two wideouts, Odell and Marshall. And in the backfield, you're going to have Ingram. That's catch 22, X4, number 88. 4 times 22 is 88. So what you can do with Ingram, because he did play a lot of H-back in college.
He did.
You know, he can either stay in and block if you see something happening. He can go out for a pass, or Eli can flip him the ball, and he can become a running back. That's a formation that will give Eli at least an extra second to throw the ball, and you would think Odell and Marshall should be able to create separation if he gets an
now,
extra
Charlie,
second.
Now, Charlie, here's
or
what I would do. Instead of that, and I think what you're talking about makes a certain amount of sense. I don't know about handing the ball off to Evan Ingram. He's never done it before. I'm not sure if that's going to happen.
Not handing him off, but kind of flipping the ball.
Well,
you know,
whatever the case
by.
Might be, I would much prefer putting Vereen in the backfield in that formation and then putting Ingram and Red Ellison as the two tight ends. So you have two really good receiving weapons in Vereen and Ingram. If you want to max protect, you can send one of them out, leave the other one in the block, or, you know, however you want to do it on a given play. In fact, you can switch that around to keep defenses on their toes, which guy's going to block, which guy's going to go for a pass. Ellison can help in blocking, and I think it kind of achieves the same type of goal you're looking at.
Well, and I'll add Matt Lacoste would be good, too, because remember, he's had experience at Illinois where he's been used out of the backfield, and he can receive, especially if you're running some goal line red zone formations.
There you go. Maybe you put Lacoste in the backfield and put Ingram on one of the tight ends. Either way, but I like it better because catch 22 works with Ingram being in the backfield.
He just like the name. He doesn't care about the formation. He just likes the name.
So what is it? Catch 22 X 4.
Yeah, 4 times.
My head hurts, okay?
I pray we're not going to see that at some point this year because Charlie's going to get so cocky if they actually use that formation.
I would pay to just have Charlie on one side of a table and the Giants coaching staff on the other and then attempting to listen to Charlie sell them on running plays.
I think
I would be a fly on the wall, and I would just love to just sit back.
I think in 2 weeks when the front office returns, I think you should go upstairs, march into an office, and say, guys, I have something I think could really help this team win some games this year.
Sure.
This is my idea. I think it'll work.
No, I don't want to take credit for anything that Charlie comes up with.
Matt Coach, so I get credit. So he'll say, hey, man, this fan just sent this to me, and it's been working. So we'll see.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right,
okay,
Charlie.
Guys.
I also have a sinking ship that you can handcuff yourself to. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, we'll consult with him on that one. Actually, kudos to Charlie, though. At least he's getting creative enough where everything's not focusing on the offensive line anymore. He's actually throwing in some tight ends and running backs to mix things up.
And these little nomenclature.
Yes.
Catch 22 X4. Jeez. It's not bad. It's clever, the name.
It is.
How many different iterations of that do you think he came up with? Do you think he has like a notebook with like arrows and names and everything?
I think he does, yes. I mean, he's had a lot of time on his hands, you know, unless there's been a lot of events going on in Maine that I don't know about. But I could tell you I highly doubt that. And I know he's the talk of the town, but I still think he has time to fill out the notebook. A catch 22 is not a positive term when you're running a play, you know, because when you're in a catch 22, does that bring confidence?
Yeah, because a catch 22 generally is you have choices, but all the choices are bad ones.
Exactly.
Right?
So I'm not in love with the fact that the players are going to buy into the name. See, for somebody so caught up in the name and the label of the play, I don't think he thought it through.
Yeah, it sounds catchy, but the meaning of it is negative.
There you go. And I'm one to read into the meaning of it. So Charlie, you know, you started off high, and then the phone call ended just where it should normally. That's a good way to wrap things up. I just have it. By the way, did you see the we should note on Twitter, what was it? DRicker81, right? Met up with Charlie recently.
I did see
that
photo. Yes.
So I actually quoted the tweet and put it hashtag Giants Chat. I don't know if everybody saw it, but if you want to see what Charlie looks like and people have to deal with when they're around him,
we should have asked Charlie if DRicker is still locked up in his basement.
Yes, we hope D. Ricker's doing very well. Please reach out to us and make sure you're okay. He did, though, respond to the tweet, so I'm assuming he's okay.
Charlie
could have found a way to find him in some
given
capacity.
Him only access to Twitter in his little basement room, and he's keeping him locked down there.
Wait, so Charlie's nice enough to give him a laptop or some mobile device so that he could still interact with society.
Yes,
that's what you're claiming.
I think Charlie would have to have some kind of mechanism set up, though, where he has to approve all of the tweets that go out.
So his Wi-Fi has, like, security clearance where he monitors everything. It's like when you put the children restrictions on.
Steve Ricker, here's what we need. We need a picture of you outside with today's paper with the date so we know you're okay.
That you're all well.
All right?
Yes.
Thanks. Fun times, everybody. We're trying to track down a Raiders guy for tomorrow to talk about the Oakland Raiders, soon to be the Las Vegas Raiders, and we'll have a conversation about that, and then we'll talk about the Arizona Cardinals and the final team of our 2017 schedule preview on Thursday with Jeff Fegels. I've given Jeff Fegels all of his former teams, if you've noticed that. I try to put him on every show with all his former teams.
I guess there's some rationale behind that.
Fun.
He should be excited. Yes, he can reminisce a little bit. That's
absolutely
a good thing.
Maybe get like Tommy Tupon or something like that. We could talk some Cardinals. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.
Have a good one.